it will be a good assessment of what has happened in the past and what are the consequences coming out of it. Because allocation could be any, expenditure could be any, but what is coming out of it in terms of outcome is something very relevant. So that needs to be assessed also. And my second question is, have you developed any norms regarding gender budgeting as to how much money should go to women, etc.? Because there are certain sectors, this 1.2%, I'm not a person in gender budgeting, so I don't know much, but 1.2% sounds very low. I mean, does it include, for example, infrastructure expenditure and education and health, etc.? Because infrastructure is also for women. Health education also is for women. If it doesn't include, then maybe it doesn't really represent women's expenditure on women, perhaps. I don't know. But this is what I look like. And in that context, only I'm asking whether you have developed any norms about gender budgeting as to how much money should be spent on women and why do you fix up those norms and things like that.
So 30 seconds each to answer all this. We're actually running quite behind time, so we all appreciate if we could take as short as possible. That's why you cannot
differentiate. Let me start from the simpler questions. Definitely there has not been any standard to say so much percent is the ideal, and I don't think there ever will be. I've heard some that were saying from India to use the 33% as the... But for example, even the whole principle of specifying a specific percentage is against the whole principle of this is about responding to where needs are, to where inequalities are. And in some cases, that requires 90%. In some cases, it requires nothing. So we are saying there needs to be... What I mentioned is that there has been increasing effort to sort of make a deeper conversation about what kind of spending that are we talking about. Because if I look at a lot of the examples that Lucia was sharing, these are a lot of women-specific affirmative action kind of interventions. It doesn't reflect broader investment in across sectors. And so the 1.2% that she's talking about is more of a specific part of a bigger group. And I think this is something that we're learning now more, and we need to be looking at that more specifically. On the question of the realities of rural women, and all this work seemed to be like urban center focused, I agree with you. I think a lot of the work on women's rights in many respects has not completely focused on the linkages and making sure that ultimately the ultimate test is what happens at the local level in terms of those kinds of realities. And through the work on gender budgeting that I've been involved in, the work on local level and working with local government and the local planning and budgeting and interrogating the whole decentralization and fiscal decentralization processes is a way to sort of bring closer the planning and budgeting and its implementation in terms of being translated into access to services, access to resources, and more empowered approach. On the question on monitoring and evaluation, and what are basically the indicators in terms of impact on wages and impact on employment, I have to say that from what I've seen, I don't think there has been any work looking at impact of GRB on women directly. There has been work that looked at impact of the work on gender responsive budgeting on changing process, on changing policies, on changing capacities, and even changing allocation, but nothing really that has looked at the impact assessment of what has been the result. And I think at this point, this is still too soon to be able to do that. And definitely, this is something that I foresee happening. That's where we should be going, especially if we're talking about results orientation and really thinking of what needs to happen in terms of changing realities for women. Maybe that exists, but I don't think it's there yet. I think there are two main questions that I heard from the various comments from Yasin and Rania and Miriam. In a sense, I don't think there's disagreement. Maybe there has been I rushed over some things, and I started my discussion on the Paris Declaration by saying it came based out of an acknowledgement of a failure of the way things have been. There are issues there. And we need to understand the political economic context and where the history of these the whole management of aid. I was actually reading something a few days ago that was saying the amount of money that was given for aid, development aid, over the past 50 years in the whole world is $2 trillion. $2 trillion. What was mobilized during the past 6 months to bail out the financial sector was how much? $18 trillion. In 6 months' time, there was like trillion after the other. And so, yes, this is the reality that we're operating within. And there is a question of both the quality of the resources that are there are inadequate, and the structural reality that that defines how much resources are available for human development is problematic. And I'm not saying one contradicts the other. We know that just because there is fiscal space and economic growth, that does not translate for women. We've known that. We continue to see that in developing countries, in rich countries, in transitioning economies. So the whole question of the need to look at the quality of investment in financing gender equality is there. The need to address the structural problems in fiscal policies and macroeconomic frameworks donor demands and trade agreements and all of that is continuously relevant and is very important. These don't contradict with each other. And if I gave the message that this is the way to go rather than that one, this is not the intention for sure. Yeah, and also just to say, this is not a matter of choice. Nobody comes to ask them, "Do you accept that?" and somebody nods. You know, it's a reality, and like you say, these are realities that change by season, and the aid effectiveness is no longer the season. And but in based on what I have been seeing, I get a certain message that there are gaps, there are accountabilities towards gender equality that are not taken seriously. And if, as a gender advocate and somebody who's sitting where I am, I can do something about making sure that accountability is realized, then I think it becomes part of the responsibility. One of the things, when the Paris Declaration was, discussions were started, nobody was talking about, the whole discussion was oriented to what the developing countries and developing country governments need to be doing. And nothing about gender equality and nothing about what the donors need to be doing. And I think through a lot of the efforts that have been done over the past couple of years from civil society, from women's groups, throughout the world, the message was that, no, there is accountability for different actors, and this is what we need to be seeing regardless of where the money is coming from. The same principle still applies. I think maybe there was one last point.
The revenue. The revenue. I can.
Yeah, I think.
Something.
Yes. Okay. I'm done.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. I just am going to say something. With about the Mexican case and the Mexico City case. Actually, I did not deal with cash transfers for oportunidades. I did deal with some different cash transfers. And they were trying to figure it out if it was a different result, at least, or at the beginning, for women and for men, how many women were given the cash transfers. For example, there is a cash transfer in Mexico City for very young people. You know, if you are young people and are in the preparatory school and have, let's say, an average grade of 8, you can ask for 600 pesos. And if you have close to 10, you can ask for a little bit more. And those are like scholarships given for students, you know. We are just starting this job, and it's very important at least to disaggregate by sex the information. They don't even have that very basic data needed in order to get some information about it. So they are going to start working on that in that issue. Who is getting the cash transfers in the heads, you know, women and men, youngsters, old people. For example, there is a very, very successful program for elderly people in Mexico City. But it's not being studied by gender. You know, it's just that it's this cash transfer that is given for all, it's universal in the sense that it's everybody who is more than 70 years old and lives in Mexico City. It has that cash transfer. So, but we need to study it, but it's a lot of work. And I was going to that same point because we don't have yet any costing research, and it's very important for these budgetary issues. But it's a lot of work to have this kind of costing for inputs needed, for example, in order to promote better or affirmative actions or something like that. You know, we don't have this special costing research done, and we are trying to develop that part, but it's something new that is not being done. Actually, we are promoting that schools go for their dissertations with some kind of this work that is needed in the different ministries of the government, but we don't have it yet. And for Yassine's need of the revenue side of the budget and to put them together, I do agree, but I think it's very, again, it's a lot of work needed because we must have the net effect, no? What's going on with taxation plus what is going on this in this expenditure side to have the net effect, but that's the next project that we are going to research, maybe. Okay, that's all. Thank you.